Yeah. You know, my wife and I did talk about, like, at what point does she cut my hair? You know, like...
Mm-hmm. I think I'm more comfortable with Amanda cutting my hair than she would be, so that point is still way, way in the future.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah, go ahead.
Did we talk about this already? I feel like I remember us talking about shaving heads.
We did talk about shaving heads and shaving your beard.
I think this is the... We've already had this conversation.
Oh, man. It's not good. Quarantine's ruining us. We're out of material. All right. I retire. Yeah. Going out while we're on bottom. That's it. Game over.
That's fine. We'll figure something out there. Welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
Good. How are you this fine morning?
It is a fine morning. The sun is shining. There were cardinals in my backyard this morning. The stupid squirrel knocked over my bird feeder, so I got bird seed all over my backyard. It's great. Yeah.
At time of recording, this has been a lovely May few days.
It has.
And it looks like to continue throughout the week for us, so I'm excited about that.
I just remembered the other thing I was going to send you.
Okay.
The polar vortex is coming back.
Okay, a polar vortex.
It's supposed to, like, potentially snow in Georgia later this week.
What?
Right. Yeah, right? Snow in Georgia in May is a possible... So I'm just saying, on the list of things that prove the world is ending, add polar vortex to it.
Polar vortex. Okay, I have not seen this. I did see this other thing in our news story about the world ending.
Right.
Like I'm sure many people have seen. Have you seen that Washington State... has murder hornets.
Wow. Yeah, I did see this, but every time you say it, I get a little bit more afraid.
Murder hornets. Yeah. I don't know if that, I don't think that's the technical term for them. That's what we're calling them at. But murder hornets, they're big. They're
like 2 inches long or something, right?
They're vicious.
Yeah.
They're like beheading bees.
Yeah, like decapitating a bee. Yes. I didn't even know you could decapitate. Like they
Why would they?
They go into a beehive and within like an hour or two, kill every bee in the hive. Like just destroy it. And then it's some weird thing about like feeding the carcass of the dead bees to their larvae. I don't know. It's really weird and really gross. I don't want it. My wife was reading an article about the murder hornets and some beekeeper went in to try to like... get this murder hornet out and save the bees and like through his protective gear, right? Like all this, you know, heavy clothing and the beekeeper stuff, through that he got stung and he described it as getting stabbed with a hot thumbtack. Like doesn't that just sound awful, right?
Yes.
Oh God.
And that's with the protective gear. That's
right.
With, like,
right.
Specialized equipment.
This isn't a dude walking around in shorts.
Yeah, this isn't that kid in My Girl.
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie? Who gets killed by the bees?
No, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Spoiler alert.
That's fine. It's fine.
It's from the 90s. It's not even that good. All right, but murder hornets. Okay, so these are not indigenous to the United States.
No.
They may have traveled here unwittingly from, I guess, Japan or somewhere in Asia. And now, potentially, maybe Washington is going to have an outbreak of murder hornets.
Cool.
Killing all their bees, stinging people with hot thumbtacks.
Yep. It's the plagues, man.
So when I was in college.
That's two.
Those two, yeah.
Start counting.
You know, I guess in Revelation, there is like locusts that like eat things, you know, like faces of a man. You know,
sure.
That's weird.
That's
so this is
a murder hornet.
I think this is it. Yeah. When I was in college, I took a botany class. I think this is pretty funny. Speaking of non-indigenous species, and we had to go to like the parks in Austin, and our teacher would kind of like walk around, and every time he saw like a tree or plant that was not indigenous to Texas, he would like rip it out of the ground with his bare hands. So it'd be so weird because he'd be talking about all these things, and then all of a sudden you'd see this like large tree. You know, a reasonably large tree, things about like an oak or something like that. And he'd be like just tearing it out of the ground, like ripping it out, like complaining that it's not indigenous, so it's going to take over.
Okay, well, there you go. There is plenty of evidence to suggest that non-indigenous things take over. That's the thing that happens.
Yeah, so look out for those murder hornets. All right, let's move on to our top story here. After we're done talking about
murder hornets.
Signs of the upcoming apocalypse.
Polar vortexes. Yeah. Oh, black holes. That was another one I saw this week. Black hole closer to Earth than ever before. Giant
polar
black
vortexes,
hole.
Murder hornets. Things are getting bad out there, babe. Yeah.
We had a good one.
I don't
run.
Know why I called you babe.
Let's never do that again.
I did just wave goodbye to my wife. She went to Starbucks, but you know.
Yeah, we'll imagine that you were subconsciously talking to your wife. That's more comfortable for me. So.
Maybe. All right. So our story right now comes from a devotional that I've been reading. Some people ask us, hey, where do you get your idea? You know, oftentimes we get topics from, you know, Christian news media, whether that's Christian Today, Relevant Magazine, Patheos, and I think we've referenced all those in the past. And sometimes we get topic ideas just from what are we talking about, what are we thinking about, and we kind of bring those to one another. So this one is my daily devotional had, I think, an interesting thing that all I sent to you earlier in the week. And so we're going to kind of work through this. So I'm going to start with the quote that he starts with here, and I'll get your opinion on this. So this quote, the church should be a safe place to hear a dangerous message.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what are your thoughts on that? And this is, I don't know who that's attributed to, but that is kind of a quote that he says he heard many times during seminary training. Yeah. What do you think?
I really appreciate the sentiment. I'm intrigued. You know, it's one of those. It's a grabby headline, right? You know, I see that on Facebook, I'm clicking that. I want to read more about it. I want to see what's going on. I'm not sold, but I'm intrigued. You know, this idea that we want the church to be safe, but the message is not, and that's an important paradox that I think we've glossed over a lot in the last 50, 100 years of Christianity. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely harkens to like the Chronicles of Narnia and Aslan of like he's not a safe lion but a good one kind of a thing, like
as if any lion is safe, right?
That's sure.
All right.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, all those people who Tiger King who's like playing with tigers, I just think it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, but like natural selection.
Yeah, but it does harken to that imagery or idea of so. Let me ask you a question on this. So. Sure. How do you have a safe church? What makes a church safe? Let's start there.
That's a great point. So I think we've got to look at that from a couple angles, right? I mean, I think most often right now, if we're thinking about a safe church, we're thinking about where can my kids go and be kept safe, and where do they have, you know, the right policies and procedures in place to make sure their volunteers are acting appropriately and you know, keeping people safe in that regards. We might be thinking about a safe church in the sense of where can I go that they have some sort of plan in place if there were an active shooter situation, right?
Sure.
I mean, that's a tragically prevalent thing that we're having to deal with right now. You know, safe church might be where can I go that that I feel welcomed and included, right? If I'm someone who has been on the outside of theological boundaries for a number of groups, is there a church that I can go to where I feel welcomed and embraced? I think those are all expressions of safe church. I'll stop there for a moment.
Yeah, I think those are good definitions of like, yeah, places where I can be vulnerable and protected and whether that's emotionally, physically, spiritually, all those things, are part of being safe. And I think that should be a refuge in a sanctuary. Speaking of the Hunchback of Notre Dame, in that movie, the Notre Dame Church Chapel is a sanctuary. It's a place where people can go to flee to, say, sanctuary, and then the authorities can't come in after them. So that's a safe place. All right, so then the other part attached to this is a dangerous message. So what does that mean to you, this idea of a dangerous message?
Yeah, well, so when I went here, if I'm thinking about that in the context of Christianity, it's, you know, we've talked about this before, right? The message of Jesus is going to call you into new and perhaps uncharted territory for your own life. It's going to call you to challenge a lot of the ways in which the world around you operates, a lot of the assumptions that perhaps you operate with in the world. You know, it's a message that's there to comfort the conflicted and conflict the comfortable. I think I'm probably murdering that a little bit, but you know, it calls us into a new way of life. Jesus's message is not an easy one. Jesus's message is not, hey, come in here and I'm just going to give you a big hug and everything's going to be all right forever. It's, I'm going to be with you no matter what, but there's a lot of stuff that is not right in the world. There's a lot of stuff that should be different. There's a lot of things that are not in line with God's plan, and we've got work to do, right? There, you know, Jesus's life was under threat. Jesus's disciples' lives were under threat. It's not a safe message, especially for Jesus's followers, you know, the followers who were writing down the gospels, for Paul, who was writing the letters, you know, things like that. These were not safe times to be following Jesus, to be proclaiming this message. It was dangerous work.
Yeah, absolutely. I think in my study right now, I'm leading a study through the book of Acts, and we just talked about this last week, of Stephen was stoned, the first martyr of the new church.
That's our reading for, well, it'll be yesterday at time of release. It'll have been Sunday.
And so that gives us this image of, like, that's the reality of the early church, of this was not a safe place. Like, it may have been a safe church to come to spiritually, but it was not safe physically to be a part of this movement. Mm-hmm. And this is very, very true for many Christians all the way around that physical aspect. Here in the United States, we don't necessarily have that same fear of, like, government oppression coming in to remove us from our worship spaces. Maybe in light of COVID, some people are thinking that we do. I personally do not share that sentiment. I don't think we have that same kind of danger associated with our message of Christianity, but we do have a danger of saying your life as you're living, the dreams and hopes that you have for yourself, your family, your country, will be shifted and changed because of your relationship with Jesus.
Yeah.
By being a part of this Christian community, those things will change.
Absolutely.
And if they're not, then maybe it's not that big. Then maybe it's not that dangerous a message. Maybe we're saying maybe it's a comfortable message or a safe message.
Well, I think that's the maybe this is where we're going with this conversation too. But that's the danger of creating a safe place at the expense of acknowledging the danger of the message, right? If I'm creating a safe place, you know, we do this with our kids too, right? If I'm creating a padded bubble for my kid, they're going to be safe, but they're not going to experience life. They're not going to know how to go out and live and interact and care and love and experience loss. You know, if all I'm ever doing is protecting them from the harshness of the world, they're not going to know the goodness of God in a lot of ways.
Absolutely. And this is kind of where my devotion here was going to turn, is that sometimes here in America, we have confused safe with comfortable. And I think and churches are part of that confusion. So they think, well, what makes a safe church? You know, clean bathrooms, comfortable seating, easy to digest and understand sermons.
Sure.
Sermons
that agree with what I already believe.
Yeah, sermons that you kind of come in knowing that the pastor is going to be speaking in a way that you already share the point of view. And I think this is kind of the most thing that he ends his first point. The only challenge most of us face on Sunday mornings is actually getting our families to church. And I think that may be, you know, a good question. If that's the biggest challenge you have as a family or as a person, of like getting to the building and then smooth sailing from there, maybe you don't have this dangerous message attached to what is going on at church.
Yeah.
Maybe something is different challenging you there. And maybe that is convicting for us as a congregation. Maybe it's convicting for us as a Christian community, or us as podcast listeners. Have we confused safe and comfortable?
Yeah.
And what do you think there? Has the American church confused safe and comfortable?
Yeah, I think in a lot of places it has. I think some churches do this better than others, right? But if you, particularly when we turn around and look at the kind of market-driven church, right? We're going to give people what they want. And, you know, I think in a lot of ways we entered into this with the best of intentions, right? If you give people what they want, they'll show up. And if they show up, they'll be able to hear about Jesus. And, you know, if your ultimate goal is to get people to hear about Jesus, then you want them to get in the building. And, okay, that's a good motivation. But what have we done that at the expense of, right? Are we trying to get people to hear about Jesus by only talking about the ways in which Jesus is going to help you, Jesus is going to make you feel better, Jesus is going to fix your life, everything's going to be hunky-dory, without saying the ways, well, Jesus is going to wreck your life. Like, it's going to wreck your life for the better, but Jesus is going to wreck your life.
Yeah.
You know, in a lot of ways, I'm thinking about when I was a counselor at camp, and we had a rock wall, a climbing wall that our kids could go on, and a zip line that went off the thing. And so every kid, when they got into middle school and higher, every kid had a chance to climb the rock wall throughout the week. And we did all sorts of stuff. And one of the things that I'm thinking about with this, right, is that kids would get on this rock wall and they would be absolutely terrified.
I'm sure.
Because this thing was completely out of their comfort zone. They were no longer comfortable. I mean, we can even just talk about the harness themselves, right? If you've ever been in a climbing harness, these things are not designed for comfort, right? They, you know, they're uncomfortable. They're and we have like they're really durable, so they last forever, and they're really safe, but they're like super uncomfortable harnesses. These are not like the top of the line things, and so they're really uncomfortable. And so the kids are trying to climb, and so our reassurance to them through this whole process, right, as they're moving up, because we're all trained and we're doing this right, and you know, you are safe even if you're uncomfortable. And I think that's the balance that we want to strike in the church, is assuring people you are safe, and you are safe enough that you can hear this uncomfortable message, you can do this uncomfortable thing, you can climb this uncomfortable rock wall, but you are still safe, right? You're going to be in a space where we're not here to attack you, we're not here to, you know, accost you theologically or physically. We're going to keep your kids safe, we're going to keep you safe, but you are going to be challenged. And maybe challenged is better than dangerous. I don't know. I think both of them have their implications there. But the message is going to push you places you didn't think you want to go, because that's what Jesus is always calling us to do.
Yeah, I think that's a great analogy of the high ropes course, safety versus comfort versus a real feeling, true or not, of danger, of risk. You know, that they're, you know, the participant up on the rock wall, up on the pole, they're going to jump off and grab a thing. It does have a real sense of risk and concern. Yeah. And they're completely safe the whole time. I mean, like, that's the way that those systems work. I'm also a camp guy, so I completely agree that that's how it is perceived. So I think coming back to something you said earlier, it's like, if we give people what they want with the intention of, then they'll come in and hear about Jesus. I think we definitely run into the danger of saying, and we're also going to give you the Jesus that you want.
Yeah,
and that's, and not the Jesus that is. Mm-hmm. And that's, that can be a tough place for all of us to say, like, well, eventually, you know, we're in a sense preaching to the choir. We're preaching to the people who already hear or agree with what we want them to hear before we've even said it, kind of a thing. Yeah. And that, I think, can be that idea of like, well, church has now grown comfortable. And then I think that that leads us to maybe our final, not necessarily final point, but our transition to how we're going to say is, and that leads us to an idea of my faith becomes safe and comfortable. Not just my place of worship and learning, but my faith is now safe and comfortable. All right, so what do you think there of, is that a reality if our churches become this comfort place and safe place? And again, comfort and safety are good things. Does that can lead us to a place where we say, now my faith in Jesus is comfortable and safe?
Yeah, I do think that leads us to that place, Ken. And I think that's both good and bad, right? Because if we go back to that rock wall analogy for a while, there comes a time when you finally get comfortable in that harness.
Sure.
And you gain a certain comfort. And because you're comfortable in that harness, because you're comfortable trusting the environment that you're in, you're able to do more, right? You're able to climb higher. You're able to do a new element. You're able to try things that you didn't think you were. So I think striking a balance of, okay, I'm comfortable in my faith, and that's good, that comfort is going to drive me to do more and to be challenged in new ways, versus I'm comfortable in my faith, and so now I'm going to hunker down and just stay right here.
Yeah.
And that's the really fine line that we're walking there. And this is something, you know, I don't know how many of our listeners, you know, think a lot about what kind of texts their pastors are preaching on. There are kind of two schools of thought in preaching. There's one that follows this thing we call the lectionary, where it kind of you're told this is what you're going to preach every week. And other ones where you just get to pick whatever you want to talk about. And at Lord of Life and in a lot of Lutheran churches, we often use the lectionary. And I have my qualms with it. It's not perfect. It's not an ideal system. But one of the things I really value about it is that it forces me to preach about the Jesus that makes me uncomfortable. Right.
Yeah.
It forces us to hear those stories of Jesus calling us out of those comfort zones. Whereas if I'm just going to go into the Bible and say, what do I want to preach on this week? I'm going to say, well, I like when Jesus talks about this. And so then, you know, we're going to get that one perspective of Jesus, and it's going to be much easier for us to be comfortable and just, you know, hunker down in our warm, snuggly blankets and not get out and face the world. Whereas if we're truly comfortable in our faith, if we're truly safe in our worship space, then we should welcome and invite the opportunity to be challenged, because we know we are still safe. And we know that even if it's challenging, we are still being cared for.
Absolutely. I think that is a good point of view on that one. So for this, we're going to transition here a little bit. So if that is like, if our faith becomes comfortable, though, and now we have a real challenge to our faith, a real pain that is introduced to our faith life, to our lives, yeah, something that makes us uncomfortable, mm-hmm, makes us feel unsafe, then like, well, what happens now? And I think that's a good question. So in this, my devotional here, he's going to talk about Dr. Paul Brandt, who is a doctor who worked with lepers in India.
Mm, okay.
And he wrote a book called Pain, The Gift Nobody Wants. Mm. And so, you know, Jesus will encounter leprosy a handful of times in his ministry. Leprosy comes up. In the Bible, it's more of like a catch-all for like any skin disease, really. Yeah. Like, it's not necessarily what we would define as leprosy here in 2020. But
it's not good either way.
Not good either way. But leprosy ultimately is a disease that destroys like nerve endings in the body, usually in the extremities and the face. And so that doesn't sound like that bad, because that would destroy kind of your pain receptors. And so if you could not feel pain in your hand, typically we associate leprosy with like rotting flesh, or like sometimes body parts like falling off. Well, if you couldn't, mm-hmm, feel pain in your hand and you put your hand down on a hot stove, everyone else would immediately remove it, you know, very, very quickly.
Yeah.
But the leper would leave it because they couldn't feel it, right, until they smelt it or they looked down, you know, kind of a thing. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, what could have been a slight burn that hurts for a day or two now becomes a ruined hand.
Yeah. Or is water too hot? Or, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Break a bone in your foot and walk around on it. And they just, yep, don't really know. And so he is going to say, like in this book, Dr. Paul Brand, Pain, the Gift That Nobody Wants, is that, man, we should be thanking God for pain, because pain alerts us to the real things that are happening in our world. Most of us don't ever go to the doctor unless there's pain, mm-hmm, happening. That we need pain to tell us something is wrong,
yeah,
and you need to deal with this, or else you have to deal with the pain. And so if we want a comfortable, safe faith, and pain comes in and we just want to eliminate it immediately or run away from it immediately or hide from it, it may not have its intended effect of alerting us to something really, really wrong in our own faith life, our own spiritual life, that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
So what do you think of that? Can pain be a good or comfortable thing? And I'm using the word comfortable here, interestingly, can that be something beneficial to upend this system of us desiring comfort and safety?
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, I'm just going to stick with the rock wall analogy, because I think that's been helpful, right? If you are pushing yourself as someone who's on a rock wall, you're going to experience some pain because you're using muscles and areas that you've not used before. But using those muscles and allowing your body to experience some level of that pain is what's going to make it possible for you to do more and new and different things.
Yeah.
You know, same concept for working out, same concept for running, right? This is all... there's a threshold of pain that you have to push yourself through so that your body can grow and be challenged in new ways. And so when we apply that to our faith, I think there are similar things here. I don't think that this means, oh, well, we just need to subject ourselves to a life of pain and suffering and welcome and invite any opportunity. No, we don't just have to put ourselves into situations that are painful or put ourselves into situations that are going to cause us suffering. But... you know, rather than running from the pain, rather than running from the suffering, how do we sit in the pain and the suffering? You know, we can think of the story of Job and his friends, right? How do we just sit in the ashes and allow ourselves to say, okay, there's pain here. What do I do with this? What does this pain have to say to me? Because the pain, even if we don't like the pain, maybe especially if we don't like the pain has something to say to you, right? If I'm going for a run and I start to feel pain, ignoring it completely and just pushing harder and harder is going to get me hurt more, right?
Yes.
But acknowledging the pain and saying, okay, what is this pain telling me can help me correct my form, can help me adapt so that I'm running smarter or running safer. It can help me learn so that I'm doing this in a better way. So, you know, sitting with the pain, what does this pain have to say to me? Or what am I going to learn about my relationship with God or with others through this pain, right? And in the middle of that pain, it's really hard to do that. But it's a really valuable practice. There's another author, Brené Brown, who's kind of very popular right now. She's got some TED Talks out there that are really good. And she says some similar stuff, right, where I'm gonna mess up the quote, and so I apologize. But essentially, she describes a joy and suffering as bedfellows, right? And that if you try to cut off one, you're going to cut yourself off from others.
Yeah.
And so if I cut off pain from my life, I'm also going to be cutting myself off from true joy, because those two come, it's not, I don't want to say it's a package deal, but because we're able to experience one, we're able to experience the other. We are created as people who should be able to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, right? It's a piece mm-hmm. of scripture as well. We should be able to have that fluctuation in our emotional capacity. And if we try to isolate ourselves and say, nope, I'm just going to stay even keel all the time, whether that's through medication or whether that's through an addiction or whether that's through us just trying to ignore the realities of the world we face or ignore the faith that we're being accosted with, right? If we just try to keep it even keel all the time, we're missing out on what the Spirit has to do for us and what God has promised for us.
Yeah, I think that that's what's tough is threading that needle between mm-hmm. pain can be the what C.S. Lewis would call God's megaphone in my life of like alerting me to the things that need to be focused in on spiritual pain, emotional pain, helps me see these are the places that I need to turn and cling to God, and a pursuit of comfort over pain or over reality is never really going to completely satisfy in our world as the way it is, because like that's just not the way life works. It's just pursue comfort at every level, even spiritually.
Yeah.
But if pain becomes this thing that we just kind of deal with and it just is part of our life and we just keep going and existing in pain without turning to healing, then that is also going to lead us down a dangerous path. Years ago, I worked with this guy who every time he sat down, his hip would, his like femur would come out of socket from his hip every time he sat down or laid down.
Yeah.
And so he'd stand up and have to like hold onto his desk and like shift a little bit and it would pop back in.
Oh,
that's the process. And I asked, what are you going to do about this? And he said, well, summer's really busy. So maybe next fall I'll go to the doctor and get it taken care of. And I just think, this is how you're going to live? Like just like accepting that this is happening in your life when there is a path of recovery.
Yeah.
And that's probably the hardest part, is like when there is a path of recovery, when there is a path of recovery in Jesus and just accepting and staying in the pain of saying, this is where I am and this is what it's going to be. I think that that is equally bad as saying, all I want to pursue is comfort versus just living in the pain. Both those things, I do not believe is how God desires us to live our trajectory in faith.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a reality that pain is part of this, and our spiritual life will not always be safe or comfortable. And what happens to us when pain or discomfort enters the picture is going to be a real mark of where we are spiritually, how we're pursuing God. If slight discomfort enters the picture and it throws us into a tizzy where we can't handle life anymore, where we're upset about everything, where our faith life is upended, maybe that's telling us you need to work on that faith aspect, because it's not as secure and safe as you think it was.
Yeah.
That you are pursuing a God that's safe instead of a God that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this? Yeah.
No, I think that's good. I mean, one of the things that I often come back to with people, you know, when they come to me and say, well, I heard you say this in your sermon, or I heard this thing from your sermon. One of the things that I want people to hear from that is that it often has less to do with what I've said and more to do with what the Spirit is trying to stir in them, right? And so what is it, you know, because I could ask, if we got 100 people listening to a sermon, I would hear 100 different versions of what I said, right? I mean, that's the reality of interpretation. That's why we have four gospels instead of one long one. And so, yeah, And so I, if people come to me and say, well, you said this, well, A, if I actually said that, let's talk about that. But if I didn't say those words, if you heard me say that, or if you interpreted something as meaning that, right? What is that stirring up for you? Why is that what's coming up as the thing that you're hearing, or as the thing that you feel needs to be addressed? Because I think what we're hearing in the sermon is often much more about what God is trying to do for us than it is about anything that I'm trying to say, right? I'm not nearly good enough as a preacher to craft a message that is going to speak individually to your life. And so if you think that I'm speaking individually to your life, I promise you that is the work of God using those words to impact you, and has nothing to do with the words that I am saying, and has much more to do with something that God is trying to get you to listen to. And so I genuinely hope that people hear the words that I'm saying and think, wow, he's speaking right to my life, because I want them to experience the power of God in that moment. But I want us to turn back and say, okay, if I'm feeling convicted by this, if I'm feeling challenged by this, if I feel like I really disagree with what Pastor David is saying, mm-hmm. what is that saying about me, rather than what is that saying about Pastor David? Now, there might be times where I'm way off base, right? It's entirely possible that I get up and preach something that I shouldn't, or say something in a sermon that I shouldn't have said. And, you know, I'm always inviting an opportunity to be called on that too, because I can't allow myself to be guilty of this stuff either. But if I preach something that makes you feel uncomfortable, or makes you feel like this space is not safe, let's have that conversation. Let's enter into that before we just say, well, you made me feel unsafe. Let's talk about, well, what's the experience that we're having in the midst of that?
I think the last gift, or one of the last gifts that we're going to talk about here, that pain can give us, is a sense of empathy with others too. Yeah. That at its core, it can lead us to understanding my point of view, my existence is not the only one around. That everyone is suffering in a sense, that everyone is experiencing discomfort, everyone is experiencing pain, everyone is lonely, everyone is hurting, and that pain can open up that idea of, and now I can empathize with what you're going through and be the person to hold your hand through this because I know what it's like. Now, in the same way we talked about threading the needle before, this can lead to two extremes. One is pain can be so bad that we forget that everybody else is suffering and become very selfish in our mm-hmm. grief and our mourning mm-hmm. and in our loneliness and depression or whatever that is for you, of saying, my grief, my pain is greater than the people around me. Therefore, they should be rallying to my cause and they're not. Or it gets to that martyr syndrome where we're suffering and hurting, yet we just keep giving and giving and giving, hoping somebody will one day notice, and becoming embittered that nobody ever does.
Yeah.
And so again, it is threading a needle of saying pain does help us empathize with the people around us and understand their suffering, but we don't want to become too immersed, too self-focused on our own grief that we become selfish or these self-imposed martyrs. Both of those are really just not people that are fun to be around. Yeah. And also, that's not living into the spiritual life that God desires for us.
Yeah. I think ideally the pain, right, gives us the opportunity to walk past someone in a hole and say, I've been in this hole before, jump in with them and help them find the way out. Right? Yeah. I think that's, and it's not that we're just walking around looking for the hole. It's not that we're just going to sit in the hole and wallow in it. And it's not that we're going to be angry if nobody recognizes that we jumped in the hole to help someone. It's just that we're willing to get in there and say, I've been down here before. I know what this is like, you know, and it's as simple as, right, look at the current COVID crisis. And many of us are experiencing shortages of things on the shelves of our grocery stores in ways that we have not before. And so it's forcing us to think about shopping and think about groceries and think about food supplies in ways that most of us in the United States have not had to experience, but many people in the United States and around the world experience on a daily basis. Yeah. Right? There are many people who go to a grocery store and can't just grab whatever they want and have to be very intentional about what can I afford today. There are many places in the world where you have to go and say, what's available for me to cook for my family today? Yeah. And so it's, I hope that, you know, we can come out of this and we can hold on to some of those lessons that we've learned and maintain that sense of empathy of, you know, the next time we go to the store and we do have a full stock or fully stocked meat shelf or a fully stocked toilet paper array or whatever, and we can just choose from 1,000 different types of breakfast cereal, I hope we do have an opportunity to pause and say, How can I still be caring for those people who for whom this life has not gone back to quote our normal?
Yeah, I think COVID has been this real pain that's come into our American system, and we can acknowledge some realities there. Some that very real people surrounding us in our communities are experiencing pain from this on a deep level, far greater than you or I are feeling. Where a very deep level of loss of security, job, how am I going to provide and take care of my family and kids, potentially loss of health, safety, security. That's a very real thing.
Absolutely.
And at the same time, I think there's plenty of us that are experiencing a loss of comfort, and they are equating those two things as equivalents. That my loss of not being able to do what I want, not being able to go where I want, or not being able to experience life as I wish it would be is the same as somebody who's dramatically suffering in our community. And that, I think, is where we're getting that pain part wrong, because that's a threat to our comfort, not a threat to our being. And so I think both those things are at play. And I think we do see both those things. If you watch the news of how people are responding to COVID, both those things are there, right? Like both those things are very, very real there. And it does make me sometimes question as a nation, you know, like I remember reading, you know, like in World War II, you know, people would have food shortages and they would just deal with it as a country and being like, yeah, we at a place where we could do that right now, you know, are we at a place where a loss of comfort equals a loss of everything else in our world? But at the same time, I don't want to diminish. There's real pain happening from COVID. Both those, that is very real.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's real for everybody who is out there, I think, complaining about the loss of what they want this situation to be right now.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, and so I think that that does lead us to a very fine line of like saying, I am uncomfortable by this. I don't get to eat all the things I want to eat. I don't get to go all the places I want to go. I have not gotten to watch the movies I wanted to watch or see the family I wanted to see. Very real things that I love and care about are going to be canceled.
Yep.
I mean, that's just the nature of the thing. Are they not going to happen the way I want them to be?
Yep.
And yet, my level of faith in God or my level of existence has not been as dramatically altered as my neighbor. And that is the discomfort. That is the pain that needs to be addressed, is that pain and not mine. Because mine is just a loss of comfort.
Yeah.
And so I think that that is, you know, a very real way for us as a country or community to experience what COVID is doing to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that gives us, you know, good wrapping up point. So, any last thoughts?
Yeah, don't cut yourself off from pain.
So, yeah.
When you feel pain, there's probably something that you're supposed to be experiencing in the midst of that. And it doesn't, I want us to be careful. I don't think this gets us to a point of, well, God brought about this pain in your life so that you can learn a lesson. Like, I don't think that's it either. I think pain exists. And because pain exists, there are things that we can learn. And pain exists in a lot of ways that we can grow and be stronger from it. And that doesn't mean that God put that pain in your life to teach you a lesson. But it does mean that you can learn something from the pain.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Pain is just part of reality. And like, that's just the way it goes. And so when it happens, there's gifts within there, whether we want, but they sometimes are hard to see.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't want to experience those gifts that come through pain. But without it, the gift of pain, our reality would be different. We would not love the way we do. We would not exist the way we do without that gift of where we're going, where we are right now in this earth. That's just part of it. All right, well, where can you find us?
Hey, if you liked what you heard today or on any of our other episodes, you can always find us at www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. You can find all, I think, 85 of our episodes now, Patrick.
Oh, wow.
We are cranking them out like nobody's business. And so,
what a week.
If you want to experience some pain from which you can learn and grow, you can listen to the first 5 or so episodes of our podcast.
Yeah, those were painful.
otherwise, just go and check out some of our favorites that are there on the website. You can, of course, find us on Facebook, where we'll have some more live content coming at you in the next couple of weeks. We hope that you and yours are staying safe and taking care of one another. And if you can, take care of someone else as well. Yeah, I think that's all I got from all of us here at Beyond Sunday, which is really just me and Patrick.
Yeah.
For both of us.
You know, I feel like maybe there's like a team out there, right? Like a support team of who's like in our corner rooting for us.
Sure.
I think that team exists. You know, they're part of it. They're part of the process.
Yeah, the proverbial sixth man of the Beyond Sunday podcast.
Yeah, we could not do that. We could not do this without some listeners.
That's not true. There is zero evidence to suggest that you and I would stop doing this if we didn't have listeners.
And some episodes we might not. So. All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week.